Family, I'm so happy to announce the launch of my brand new premium podcast. It's called Ideas That Matter Plus. This is an exciting new development that we've been working on for some time. This after seeing a lot of you request coming through saying thank you for what we've done and wanting more. Ideas That Matter Plus is a more targeted podcast that focuses on business strategies and more high-level thinking to help highly ambitious entrepreneurs, SMEs, business owners and founders, even the CEOs of big business. It only costs 450 Rand per month and will be coming in, but I mean coming in hot. So, subscribe now to Ideas That Matter Plus, now available on Spotify or Apple Podcast Store. Sayonara.
It's time to take your seat at the table. Find out how with Vusi Tembegwayo as we discuss Ideas That Matter, a catalyst for bold action.
Hello, family, and welcome to what is the very first episode of the VT Podcast for what you and I, I'm sure, both are hoping is going to be a glorious, fantastic year, 2021. May the curses of 2020 stay in the past. The challenges and difficulties we faced, may they be left in what was that horrendous, horrid year of 2020. This year, I wish for you, your loved ones, and your family nothing but prosperity, love, and growth. To get us started with our podcast for this year, I wanted to start with a conversation that we've touched on before but didn't get into much detail. A conversation about being indoctrinated. The idea that everything we are, believe, and see has been taught to us to either see it that way, believe it to be what it is, or become what we perceive it as is. To do this, I'm going to solicit some help from an incredible author called Doris Lessing. Doris wrote a book called The Golden Notebook. But before I do, I need to create a bit of context about where I came upon Doris's work. So, it's known, generally, but if you didn't, I'm happy to confess it here, that I take time out, usually every 4 to 6 months, and I go and spend a week away doing absolutely nothing. I typically will take time and visit what is a fantastic mental wellness center or something of that sort where people are there to reconfigure, rejig, rebuild their own minds. I have to tell you that this is one of my greatest secrets for being a high performer. Imagine it this way. You see, the reason Formula One cars have to pit at the frequency at which they pit is because at the speed at which they drive. So if you're me, right, and you're CEO of two different companies, one of them has offices across 3 different timelines, you're managing teams of people all over the world, you have a global traveling schedule that is tethered to your public speaking career where I'm delivering minimum 200 keynotes in a year, you're writing books, you're writing articles, you're writing pieces, you're being interviewed by media as a thought leader, you're running a podcast, you've got a VTTV platform, you're a family man with 3 kids and 12 years married, all of that stuff builds. It builds pressure, especially the pressure to constantly be performing at your peak. So I learned some time ago that I needed to allow myself the ability and opportunity to decompress, as Iman Rapetti calls it. Here's what had happened. I had landed in Nelspruit. I remember I was 27 years old, and I was just on the throes of closing this major contract with SASSA, the Social Security Agency of South Africa. They needed some work done. My company was right and ripe and ready to do that work. And I knew the CFO at the time, and I was on my way to meeting with him because he'd been a client of mine at a previous employer that I'd had. And I remember getting on that, was it Express or Air Link airline? I can't quite remember, but I remember getting on that airline. I felt quite queasy. It was an early Wednesday morning flight to Nelspruit Airport in Mpumalanga. And so the flight takes off. The flights are fairly short, so they don't feed you any warm food. They gave us a muffin, and I remember it was like a cinnamon-flavored muffin with Ceres fruit juice. The flight lands, and I felt quite queasy. Anyway, As you do, you're instructed to disembark. You take off your seatbelt. You stand up. You take your baggage from right above your head on the baggage compartment. And then you start getting off the plane. I remember walking and getting off the plane. I just can't quite remember literally walking down the steps of the plane. Because apparently what happened was as I was walking out of the plane, I went lights out and I just collapsed. The next thing I know, as I came to, I was waking up in what is kind of the infirmary or the medical center in the actual airport. And I opened up my eyes and there was a lady in front of me and one of the cabin crew members. And I said, "What happened? What went wrong?" And they said, "We don't know, sir. You just collapsed." I said to them, "I don't feel well." And I remember immediately standing up and rushing to the bathroom. And my body just started with this vile process of trying to eject all the fluids that were in my stomach. And so you can imagine this, right? I'm arched and heeled over the toilet and I'm just vomiting. The issue is I'd had nothing to eat really. And so there was nothing to vomit after the third or fourth iteration. And this carried on violently for much of the morning. I called my client and I told him what was happening. He said to me, "I suggest you go home and get some rest." And so I did. I booked a flight, a return flight immediately. I waited for that return flight, which is an afternoon flight. And all the while, I'm in the bathroom just vomiting violently. I landed at Oratumbo Airport, immediately rushed to the doctor. And when I arrived at the doctor's rooms, the doctor took me and put me on the bed. He connected this little wire into my veins. And then he said to me, "You're weak because you've lost all of your electrolytes." And so, as you might imagine, I'm quite furious now, right? It's like, "What electrolytes? What are electrolytes? What are we talking about here? Electrons? What is this?" Right? And then I said to him, "But what's going on? Am I sick? What's the issue? I mean, do the tests, right?" So he draws my blood and he does the tests, but he looks at me, Dr. Ross does at Caswell North Center, and he said to me, he said, "Look, I don't think there's anything wrong with you. I think you're actually just stressed and fatigued." I said, "Surely not. I mean, I'm Vusi Tembiwai. Vusi Tembiwai never gets stressed and fatigued. Come on." He said, "Well, let's see." They did the tests and they came back and they told me there was absolutely nothing wrong with me. That entire episode was purely because my body had just reached the end of its tether. I'd run out of fuel. My battery cells were empty. There was no pup on the stove. I think a lot of us don't understand that this is a big part of what it means to be a performer, that you're constantly driving yourself and you think you're refueling, but sometimes the body needs to just shut down. You need to disconnect, to do nothing. And that process is just as fundamental a process for being a high performer as the process of actually doing something. It's a part of the indoctrination, I think, that we need to learn, that there is a different way that you need to configure yourself and your life. So here is the question I have for you. Do you take downtime? I mean, real, meaningful downtime. And I mean downtime from everything, from your busy family schedule, your busy gym schedule, your busy work schedule, your busy friendship schedule, just your busyness. Do you take actual downtime? The day where you can wake up as late as you want, sleep as early as you want, and do nothing in the middle of the day. Read a book, read a gossip column, watch a series on Netflix. That is just an important part of how to become a high performer. I come upon the point I'm trying to make. So one of the places I love going is White River Manor, and they've got this incredible clinical psychologist called Dr. Magda Roll. And I love working with Magda because she's really good at getting into my mind. And the last time we were there, we did some work around indoctrination. And the reason we're doing this work around indoctrination was because she was trying to help me realize that the way I do my things, live my life, and pursue my goals is the way I have been indoctrinated to think I should do my things, live my life, and pursue my goals. So for instance, today, the idea of waking up at 5 o'clock in the morning and being at the gym at 5:30, that's taken quite common hold, right? And I think it's great work done by Robin Sharma. If you read the book, and I have done, it's a fantastic piece of literature. But what's happening now is everybody's adopting that without necessarily critiquing and analyzing how it adjusts into their own lives. And so you're allowing yourself the indoctrination without the opportunity for adjustment. That's going to create additive pressure and stress. So Dr. Magda gave me this incredible book to read, The Golden Notebook by Doris Lessing. In there, there is this piece that talks about the process of being indoctrinated. Let me read it to you now. It says, "Ideally, what should be said to every child, repeatedly throughout his or her schooling life, is something like this. You are in the process of being indoctrinated. We have not yet evolved a system of education that is not a system of indoctrination. We're sorry, but that's the best we can do. What you're being taught here is an amalgam of current prejudice and the choices of this particular culture. The slightest look at history will show how impermanent these must be. You are being taught by people who have been able to accommodate themselves to a regime of thought laid down by their predecessors. It's a self-perpetuating system. Those of you more robust and individual than others will be encouraged to leave and find ways of educating yourself, educating your own judgments. Those that stay must remember, always and all the time, that they're being molded and patterned to fit into the narrow and particular needs of this particular society." This is such a powerful piece of literature. In my mind, it equals only Rudyard Kipling's work with the poem, If. There are a couple of bits I want to extract out of this just for a brief discussion. She says, "What you are being taught is an amalgam of current prejudice and the choices of this particular culture. The slightest look at history will show how impermanent these must be." I do remember last year sometime making the point that everything we are, we learned. And all the cultures that we live in were created. There was then, therefore, a time that that culture didn't exist, that ritual didn't exist, and that tradition didn't exist. And so if there was a time that that culture, ritual, and tradition didn't exist, and listen to this because it's so powerful, it means that that culture, ritual, and tradition was created by a group of people to serve a particular purpose over a specific period of time. If that purpose is not aligned to your life, and it's not that period of time any longer, you are hanging on to cultures, rituals, and traditions that no longer serve what you're trying to do with your life. She continues to say, "You're being taught by people who have been able to accommodate themselves to a regime of thought laid down by their predecessors. It's a self-perpetuating system. Those of you more robust and individual than others will be encouraged to leave and find ways of educating yourself, educating your own judgments." That's such an important conversation. Educating your own judgments. That means that you bear not only the standard for critical thought, but the standard by which your mind will assess the veracity of that critical thought. Educating your own judgments. "Those that stay must remember, always and all time, that you're being molded and patterned in to fit into the narrow and particular needs of this particular society." And so there are some of you who are fitting into life perfectly right now. You are the perfect person in society. You church on Sunday, you're at work exactly 8 o'clock, you leave at exactly 5 o'clock, and you take your perfect hour lunch between 12 and 1. You go on leave for 12 and a half days in a year, you have 2.5 children, because that's the median average, you have the white picket fence, and you go to gym 4 days in a week. You fashioned yourself to fit into the perfect mold of this particular society. And for those, there is no judgment, but just a love relationship that says best to you. God bless you. But for the rest of you who want different, who want the eclectic life, who see themselves as iconoclast and genuinely want to make a difference and leave the world a better place than they found it, those of you who see yourselves as contrarian, as different too, those of you who believe that you are here for a greater purpose, a different purpose, a more meaningful existence, those of you who think that etched into the books of history yet to be written, somewhere is your contribution and your name. For you, you have to recognize that the system of indoctrination that you're in isn't going to work. And so what I wish for you in this incredible year that is going to be 2021 is that you have the foresight, the veracity, and the intellectual as well as emotional, spiritual wisdom to go after all of those goals that you want to go after. But more importantly, that you allow yourself the time to take time out, to decompress. Because, and this is my final note, vulnerability isn't weakness. Knowing where you're vulnerable is a source of strength, not a source of weakness. Right. That was our first podcast for 2021. I'm thoroughly looking forward to what's going to come over the next 51 Mondays as we release these podcasts on the weekly every Monday. My name is Vusi Tembogwayo. God bless you. Cheers.
We hope that you've drawn valuable lessons from this week's podcast. To partner with us, visit mygrowthfund.co.za or email info@mygrowthfund.co.za.